This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only be talking the truth. Only be talking the truth. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey.
Rolling right along here on this Tuesday morning. It is Taz and the Moose with you, coming to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. You've got Connor Green and Pete the Body across the way, other side at the controls. Marco Belletti with your updates every 20 minutes as we go 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 Pacific, right here on CBS Sports Radio. Also, want to thank all of our affiliates all across the country, and make sure to check us out as well on Sirius and XM 206 channel, that is, and the app too. And hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Taz and the Moose, at Mark Malusis with a C, and at Official Taz. As we kick off hour number two, basically where we were at hour number one, football, more so of the rules variety, and that is based around the very fact of what has transpired in terms of the new helmet rule and the confusion. Philadelphia, whether now be the Washington Redskins, and you look at a number of situations across the league in preseason games where it seems like coaches and players are utterly confused about what they can do, what they can't do. And you could easily make the argument, Taz, you're going to be stronger early on to bring about the impact, to understand that there is change and players understand that the change is there. It's also the National Football League protecting themselves. And you could say that while they think about player safety, they also think about their pocketbook too, something we hinted upon at the end of the first hour. You know, the lawsuits moving forward, they want it to be lessened and lessened. So they want to make sure that they are doing everything that they possibly can to give you the feel that player safety is a huge concern for them, even though in the past it really wasn't. Even though they knew about the impact of concussions, it wasn't. We saw that lawsuit. Now you look at it, the scenario is that, yes, the game is inherently violent, but the NFL and the owners, if you want to look at it and say it's a kind of a cold vantage point to look at, so be it. But they're also trying to protect themselves long-term, too.
Yeah, absolutely. They're, because it's
I mean, they're businessmen.
It's absolutely. It's going to cost a lot of money over time with lawsuits and whatnot, with guys that have CTE and whatnot. And look, at the end of the day, I don't think for this coming upcoming NFL season, I don't know if we're going to have much clarity as a fan base. I really don't. I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be much. I think there's going to be a lot of confusion. I think you've seen it in the preseason already. Not just the referees, the players are confused. You're having teams like the Philadelphia Eagles and teams like the Washington Redskins meeting with officials, and they're confused and they're getting frustrated. I mean, these are NFL teams. So my fear, like I said earlier in the show, I worry that the confusion could lead to hesitation by players. If a player is going to hit another player and he hesitates, that player who's going to initiate the hit, it's a good chance he might get hurt because you got to go 100%. I know it sounds weird, but I could promise you it's a fact. So we've had a lot of people call the show this morning, Moose, as you know, talking about the helmet rule, giving their thoughts on it. Hey, Chris in Jamaica, you are on Taz and Moose on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, guys.
What's going on?
What's up?
How y'all doing this morning?
Good,
man. What's up?
How are you?
So I was calling because the other day I was hearing on, I think it was the DA show, they were talking about that there's actually a safer helmet that they could wear. But they choose not to wear it.
It's bigger. I think, it's a bigger, like, hell. It's kind of weird looking.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if they're taken away from the game, but, you know, they're getting paid all this money and they don't want to wear the helmet because it don't look cool or it's not fashionable or something like that. I don't think that's right. You know, I'm not saying it's not the safe. It's still not going to prevent anything.
Right.
But, you know, I just feel like, you know, they're taken away from the game and, you know, it's more they need to go through the education process of educating these players, you know, on what the rule is and how to tackle and the way they want them to tackle and all this other stuff.
Well, they're trying to do that, Chris, as you know. They are. And I'm not that I'm waving the flag of the NFL, believe me, but they are trying to do that. Players are trying to reinvent themselves on how to tackling, the coaching. They're dumbing it down, and they're going back to the grassroots of tackling. They're trying. But you know what it is, Chris, and we appreciate you calling. I think that a lot of these guys, you know, Moose, I just think that a lot of these athletes, these pro football players, they have habits. They have certain habits on how to hit. And there's not a lot of thinking involved. Once you see that guy and you got to make a hit on that guy or play on that guy, it's a reaction. It's an instant fast, elite athlete move. Like, you know, and I think that they have some bad habits. Not that they're bad habits, they're old habits, that's what I should say, that need to be changed.
Yeah, because that's the way they've known football. So now
that's muscle memory involved.
Right,
that's
to the now problem, all of a sudden change the way that your style and fashion, which you're going to play, is going to be difficult, but they're going to have to make that change, regardless of how difficult it might be. Any kind of change in life is difficult. It comes through... it goes through a process of you either relearning, and whether it be, you know, change in lifestyle, whether it be a diet, quit smoking, quit drinking, whatever it might be, all of a sudden things that you're accustomed to doing, now all of a sudden you have to do a little bit differently. Just like an athlete who's used to playing in a certain style and fashion, now with the rule changes being in place, well, as Chris Thompson said, well, the rules are the rules. We're going to have to make an adjustment. As players and as offensive and defensive players, we need to adjust here moving forward. And it's going to be a little bit of time in order for us to be able to do that, to get used to the new rule. The one thing that we mentioned in hour number one is I'm okay with trying to protect players. I really am. I don't think they're taking my football, quote unquote, away. However, I just want some consistency with the rule. And when I hear, well, there's a lot of gray area. No, it's rules are rules. There shouldn't be really necessarily a ton of gray area or open to interpretation. We all know what a catch is. We all know what possession is. We all know what a tackle is. And I do think, Taz, when you have rules in place, it's kind of cut and dry. We know what an out is in baseball. You know what a strike zone should be in Major League Baseball, well, whether it is or it isn't. And that's open to interpretation. How many times do we have questions or we have debates about how a home plate umpire is calling a game?
Right.
I don't want debate. No. I don't want debate whether or not that was a form tackle. I don't want to see a penalty on what was a perfect tackle and then the NFL issuing an apology or saying they got it wrong on a Monday and that potentially cost the team a game. That to me would be infuriating.
Right. Well, you know, you go to, you know, a cornerback goes to hit. You know, a running back who breaks through the line of scrimmage, gets to that next level and gets past the linebacker. So check it out, right? So a cornerback, hell, a safety, not a cornerback, a safety, he now takes his helmet, his face mask, and he puts it underneath the face mask of that running back coming at him. That's a penalty, right? He's leading with his helmet.
Yeah.
But what happens now if that running back busts through that line of scrimmage, gets past that next level of linebackers, here comes a safety, he buries his own face mask in between the numbers, the chest, of that running back. Now, I bet you that's going to be a penalty sometimes.
Right.
That's the problem.
And that's
sometimes.
The issue. You're probably right about that.
You know what I mean?
You are probably right about that.
Yeah, that's the thing that's a little funky, you know?
And that's the
inconsistency
ultimate,
to your point.
The lack of consistency would be the concern. Right. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance, as we will be joined, Taz and myself, by Charlie Casserly, former Texans and Redskins GM, will join us coming up about 17 minutes from now, 7:25 a.m. Eastern Time, 4:25 Pacific. Now works for the NFL Network. Really looking forward to that conversation. And we'll hit upon the new rule with him and a couple of things to hit upon that we touched upon last week. Number one, let's go up to Lambeau Field and Aaron Rodgers, who you and I, Taz, had kind of different takes on Rodgers being critical of his young wide receivers during some routine drills, whether he was upset that Jordy Nelson is now a member of the Oakland Raiders, or the fact that his main confidant on the coaching staff, the quarterback coach, is no longer there, or whether it be the direction of the franchise of the organization. Who knows what ticked Aaron Rodgers off? Or maybe it was just a case of that was his last straw, or maybe it was Rodgers not showing the leadership, which is something, and being overly critical. And it's okay to do that, as you mentioned, and your take was, Taz, to do that in private, not necessarily air it out publicly. Sure. Now, Rodgers was asked the question, well, were your teammates okay with the criticism? And he said, I quote unquote, I hope we're not that soft.
Well, I mean, I don't agree with Rodgers. Because he's doubling down.
Right. You know what? I doubly love it. You know what? I think it's fair. You know, honestly, he basically is saying, he is basically giving a scenario here. Let's hear Rodgers right now. Let's take a listen.
I hope we're not that soft. I hope we can, you know, have hear comments or read comments and not get offended by things. It's a professional environment. It's not a personal environment. The things I'm saying, and I don't have some vendetta against any player. I care about winning, number one. And I'm going to say and do the things that I feel like can advance us. It's going to be tough at some points. It's not a popularity contest all the time. You know, obviously, you know, as a human, you like being liked and appreciated, but I'm trying to win games because that's my job. You know, I'm not, you know, asked or needed to make personnel decisions, coaching decisions, schedule decisions. My job is to play quarterback. So that's what they're paying me to do, and I feel like, you know, I've made it pretty happy. So I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
And he's kind of, Rodgers later on, he even acknowledged that he's become a little more older and grumpier when it comes to critical of his young receivers. You know, it's interesting, though. It's a little bit of a double standard because if he's saying, I hope we're not that soft, meaning that our receivers can't take me, meaning Aaron Rodgers, publicly.
Being critical.
Well, what if the shoe was on the other foot? What if Moore or one of those, St. Brown, one of those receivers said something about him? You know, what if, or even a veteran player that's on the pack said something about, I bet you. Just wondering, betting that Rodgers would be ticked off if that happened.
They probably put, you know what, he would, I would imagine he would take his lumps and move on. I'm sure the guys were bothered by it. I'm sure they were, you know, I'm sure they weren't necessarily happy about it, but it is Aaron Rodgers. He's the best quarterback in the National Football League.
He's earned that.
If you're a rookie,
I know he's earned his stripes. Yes.
Because if we're sitting here and that rookie makes said comment, we'd be saying, what the hell are you doing?
I would rip the rookie right here.
Right, so would I. I mean, if you were an undrafted rookie or a seventh round or sixth round draft choice and you're being critical of Aaron Rodgers, what have you ever accomplished in the National Football League to be critical of Rodgers?
But what I'm saying, that's why I mentioned, let's just say hypothetically, it was a veteran player on the Packers that said something on the offense, that said something during the year about Rodgers.
Let me ask you this. If I throw Jordy Nelson and say Nelson made those things, I think Nelson could make those comments.
Well, that's his boy.
Asking me a veteran player. If I take Randall Cobb.
I think that might tick off Rodgers a little
and
bit.
And it might, but I do think they've accomplished enough in Lambeau for him to be able to make that. If I take, say, Clay Matthews.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah.
If I say, they're going to have to accomplish something. It's going to be a veteran of some substance that's going to be critical of Aaron Rodgers. So if I threw out three names out there, I think Aaron Rodgers would take the medicine and move on with his
name. And we'll never know the answer to that, but here's the thing. What I'm saying is, the point I'm making is that it's a little bit of a double standard because Rodgers, is saying, well, I hope we're not that soft. Well, yeah, it's easy to say that when you're the guy talking smack. You know, it's easy to say that when you're on top of the mountain and these are kids that are just trying to impress the offensive coordinator, the wide receivers coach, and you. They're just trying to get over and get on the field.
Right.
So they're not going to buck you, Aaron Rodgers.
But they're not.
No, they're not.
But their goal is that they are not doing what he wants them to do. And he's trying to get them to that point.
I know, and I just feel he should have said that
and
to
we
them
just
privately.
We just have a different way of looking at it to where I'm not all that critical of Rodgers in terms of, I know you know, I'm just saying to the audience, I know Rodgers his intent is in a good place. He's trying to get the best out of the young players.
I don't disagree
with
that.
And if he feels like this is the way he needs to go about doing it, that's the way he needs to do it. And that he's around these guys on a day-in, day-out basis. So maybe he felt like that was the way to go about doing it. I don't think he's just being a douche for the sake of being that way. Hmm. I think his intent, everything he just told you is true in that statement.
It is.
He's trying to win football games.
I know, but I think yes, I agree with everything you said, but there's a but. I do think he's, just my opinion, you can take it any way you want to take it. I think he's a little bitter because of the decisions that they made in the offseason, like Nelson, the quarterback coach, and the Packers, did not consult with Aaron Rodgers. I think he's a little bitter about that.
You might be right about that.
But again, I can't prove that. It's just my opinion. I don't know if that's true or not. I know we had Tony Dungy, the great coach Tony Dungy, in the studio.
No, I know he agreed with you. I get it.
He agreed. Well, yeah, it wasn't just me. I'm just saying, I think, especially a coach like Dungy, right? You want to keep everything in-house, right? So, you know, you don't want your hood on him. Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, going public and ripping – you know, these young receivers that are, you know, not that you got to handle them with kid gloves. I'm not saying tough love's a bad thing. Tough love's a good thing. Publicly tough love, I don't think is a good thing. That's my point.
Yeah, I get it, Taz, and I understand it. I'm sure for a head coach, that's the last thing you want to be hearing about in the media is because that's all of a sudden creating headlines, creating a headache, and creating drama that you don't want to have to deal with.
Yeah,
that's the other thing that Dungy certainly hits upon is you want your guys focused on what they need to do, and certainly as a staff, you don't want to have to be answering questions about how guys are looking through their walkthroughs or a specific wide receiver quarterback drill and what is Aaron Rodgers or what's the message from Aaron Rodgers and why is he delivering the style and fashion in which he's doing it. Coaches, you know this, Taz. Coaches want to limit distractions as much as they can.
Absolutely.
You know, but I do initially like the comment from Rodgers, I hope we're not that soft.
No, it was kind of, it was cute. It was definitely funny.
Listen, I hope
cute.
We're not that soft.
Yeah.
Yes, it is an entertaining comment. I think Rodgers, as you mentioned, a little older, a little crankier, and I just don't think he gives a damn.
A little salty. Yeah, he's a little salty. And I think it's cool. Just, you know, I think about those young guys that are trying to grind through. But
yeah,
I get it.
It's
like at the end of the day, it's going to make these guys better. That's what it is. And that's, I do think that's Aaron Rodgers' goal, to your point.
Coming up straight ahead, we're going to hear again an update from Marco. And Charlie Castle will join Taz and myself as we talk a little NFL. NFL Network, former Skins, former Texans general manager, will run around the league, all the interesting storylines. We'll get his thought on the new helmet rule, everything and the like. We'll do that next. Taz and the Moose with you, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Generic played out hip-hop music. That's not my choice, Moose. Don't blame me for that one.
Football is around the corner. No, I love this song. And tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, NFL Hall of Famer Michael Strahan sits down with the women of We Need to Talk to discuss the upcoming season, only on CBS Sports Network. There you go. Very nice.
Yeah.
Good job. Dude.
Now I know who picked it.
Solid
now
music.
I know
yeah.
who picked it.
Well, whoa.
There it is.
Black Rob.
Who's this? Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Black Rob. Gimmick whoa. Rob. All right, no problem.
I'm sorry, I can't contribute to this. I have no idea what this song is.
Take it away, Marco. How you doing?
I'm with Marco on it. And I'm usually into the hip-hop, but I like more stuff that's from the year 2015 and above.
Gotcha.
Yeah, now as I wear my Zeppelin shirt, I'll just read the spot that says we're brought to you by Geico.
Said old disco.
Hey, I'm also a big Zeppelin fan.
Here we go. Here it is.
Okay. All right.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Well, pennant races are definitely heating up, and the A's continue to have Lady Luck on their side.
Swung on it. Mastey throws it by him. I want to tell you, it was excruciating in the last two innings.
That's Vince Catronio on the final call for the A's. That's because Oakland jumped out to a 7-1 lead, and they held on for dear life and beat the Mariners 7-6. A's now within two games of the Astros, believe it or not, for tops in the division. Also extended their lead on the Mariners to 2.5 for that second wild card. It might be panic time in the Bronx. Their ace, Luis Severino, has flat lost it. After a blistering start to the year, a 1.98 ERA in July. He allowed four runs on seven hits and four innings to the Mets as they beat the Yankees 8-5. So a former Cy Young candidate in July is now pitching to an ERA north of 7 in his last 7 starts.
We got to help and find and get to the bottom of it. You know, physically, I think he's sound, but we got to get this righted, and that's on all of us because he's so important. Obviously, he's so dynamic when he's right.
And that's Aaron Boone, who did insist he's not going to be skipped. Doesn't look like he's going to be a DL candidate. He's not going to get skipped in the rotation. They're going to continue to try to figure it out, which the Yankees need to do, considering the fact that they're 10 games behind the Red Sox, so their division hopes are pretty much gone, and they're going to be facing that one-game playoff later in the season. They got to figure out who the race is going to be to actually throw in that game. And right now, it does not look like Severino. Meanwhile, for the Nationals, nothing going right. Got walked off on for the second straight day. Cardinals pulled the trick this time. Paul DeJong, the homers. The Cardinals up their win streak to 6, a 7-6 victory. Dodgers, another gut punch to them. Their battle for the NL West. They coughed up a 2-0 lead in the ninth. Fell to the Giants 5-2. LA's night tied with Colorado. They're one game behind the Diamondbacks, who also lost to the Rangers 5-3. Took some time in the NFL, but all the first-round picks are finally signed. Roquan Smith and the Bears came to terms on that four-year deal, $18 million guaranteed. Broncos quarterback depth chart looks a bit different. Seventh-round pick in 2017, Chad Kelly, has now jumped 2016 first-rounder Paxton Lynch. They're now that's the backup spot. Of course, newly signed Case Keenum is the number one in Denver. Second overall pick, Saquon Barkley, came up lame in practice. Giants don't seem to think it's too serious as of now, calling it just a mild hamstring strain. And some more info is coming out about former Ohio State assistant coach Zach Smith. It has now come to light that Smith was cited for drunken driving in 2013. He did not inform head coach Urban Meyer. Smith later pled guilty to a lesser charge. Ohio State obviously is investigating the matter. Guys?
All right. Thank you, Marco. Let's hit the guest line right now. Let's welcome aboard Charlie Casserly, former GM with the Redskins and the Texans, NFL Network. He works now. Hey, Charlie, Taz of the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
What's up, Charlie?
Hey, great here with you.
You got it, Charlie. Let's start here. I know there seems to be a lot of confusion. What's your take on the new helmet rule in the National Football League, Charlie?
You know, I've got to see more of it. I haven't really been focusing on it, to be honest with you. I'm just watching players. I was on the competition committee for years, the rules committee, and we went through a discussion about eliminating the chop block, an offensive block where you hit below the waist.
Yeah.
And the issue was that we thought it was just too hard to write and call to be able to execute it. I think what you have here in the big picture, eliminate the plays out in space, the no-brainers. Those are the ones. I don't know how you call line play. That's too hard to call. I know you'll say you'll call it. I just don't see how you do call it. The umpire is not in a good position to call it from the defensive side because he's on the offensive side. But I think eliminate the big ones, the obvious ones, and I think that's what you accomplish first if I'm officiating this.
All right, so let's talk plans. Let's talk QBs, Charlie. Love to get your thoughts, general thoughts, on some of the younger guys that we're seeing in the league now, from Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen.
Rosen, let's start with him because he played late and nobody.
Right, yeah.
Okay. I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah.
Throw away his stats. Had a bunch of drop balls. Was under pressure constantly. But he made big throws. What I mean by that is split-second decisions, pressure, accurate, and downfield. I saw a number of those plays during the course of the game. So I thought he was outstanding. On Twitter, I'm going to show one of those plays later today. Sam Darnold, I thought he was excellent. I thought, again, pocket poise, command of the offense, ability to move in the pocket and see and being accurate. You know, he missed the downfield ball. That's something we got to watch. Something I think he probably needs to improve upon on him. Josh Allen, he's number three of these. But again, they were positive. The arm strength jumps out with him in the athletic ability.
Right, right.
The accuracy is off. It was off in college. That's something to improve upon there.
Charlie, what about what's your take being a former executive in terms of when quarterbacks or when rookie quarterbacks should play?
You know, there is no perfect answer to this. Peyton Manning played right away, and I think he might have led the league in interceptions his first year. Carson Palmer never played a down as a rookie. Eli Manning, Donovan McNabb, they came in sometime in the latter part of that of their first year. I think it depends on a couple of things. In a perfect world, you'd like them to sit, learn from the veteran, have a coach in the room that's a quarterback-type guy, a veteran quarterback to kind of they can bounce things off of, and have a quarterback coach on top of that too. Bring them along slowly and then let them play at some point when it makes sense for you and the team to put them in, whatever that means. You're losing, you think the guy's ready. Sometimes what happens is he's your best option. You don't plan on playing them. They weren't going to play Blake Bortles as a rookie in Jacksonville, but he was just their best quarterback. So you end up playing some guys too early, and that can be a detriment if the team isn't very good around them.
Well, see, now it's interesting we just brought that up, too, because, as you know, with the Cleveland Browns, it's a little bit, it's a situation of a veteran quarterback there in Tyrod Taylor, where Baker Mayfield, could end up being the starter. Some people think he should be the starter already. That's what some people think. I mean, love to get your thoughts on that, because that's a situation where you got a veteran in Taylor and you got a guy like Mayfield who's, I guess, in essence, learning under him and getting his sea legs under him. What's your thoughts out of with the Browns?
Well, the Browns have improved. Now, the left tackle is kind of a question mark. They moved the left guard, Joel Bitonio, to left tackle. He played tackle in college. Good technician, but maybe not quite the athlete you wanted left tackle.
Okay.
So you're not protecting him maybe as well. Taylor is definitely a guy that I think there's a ceiling to him. I don't think he's the answer, right, but he can go line up and play and be respectable for you, and he's done that in Buffalo. But at some point, the defenses catch up to him. unless he's continued to improve, and you know, red zone third down efficiency, those things that you know you'd like to see him a little bit better. And he doesn't see well from the pocket. There's some short guys like Breeze that have instincts that find guys even though they can't see him.
I don't think
Taylor does that consistently. I thought Mayfield was very good in his first preseason game, and that's one where I'd start Taylor, but at some point if the season's not going well, then I just graduate like the Giants did with Eli Manning and go with Mayfield because he's the future.
Gotcha.
Charlie.
Mayfield has to know enough to be able to protect himself and run an offense.
Right.
That's the key there, too.
Fair point. And staying in Cleveland, what about their interest here in Dez Bryant, Charlie? Are you surprised that Dez is yet to hook on with an NFL team?
Not necessarily, though Baltimore did offer him a contract.
They did.
Right, yep.
So that's one team that offered him a contract. But when you watch him last year and in the previous year, he can't separate from defenders. You press him, you take him out of the ball game. He dropped balls last year. You know, one of the things about him is his lack of discipline at times in running routes, especially in zone situations. And I think what happened in Dallas is he was not the number one guy. He was not a big threat to the other team. And he was more of a threat to their quarterback, that the quarterback was forcing the ball to him because they felt they had to. And that was hindering the quarterback's development. Now, on the other hand, I don't think they have any receivers right now that are that good.
Yeah.
So that's another problem to talk about. But that's how I think people see him. This guy's not a threat anymore. And you don't know what you're bringing with this guy.
Yeah,
as far as his attitude.
Off field, he could definitely give a little bit of a headache.
So, coachability and discipline
running
routes and things like that. So
true. Green Bay, right? Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, as you know, Aaron Rodgers has been outspoken a little bit about, you know, this early goings here about the younger wide receivers on the team, you know, and kind of put them publicly to the fire a little bit and put a gun to their head, in lack of better terms. You know, Moose and I here, we've kind of been on two different sides of the fence with this topic as far as Aaron Rodgers. Do you feel like, do you feel that he's a little, or could it be that a player is bitter, a guy like Rodgers, that he wasn't in the loop when these decisions were made in the offseason to get rid of, you know, a guy like Jordy Nelson and the quarterback coach being gone, and Rodgers was kind of public saying, I wasn't told this. From a front office perspective, from a high brass perspective, does a guy like Aaron Rodgers, should the Packers should have talked to him about this during that time?
Not necessarily, no. Yeah, I know that in Washington with Joe Gibbs, I don't really remember us talking about trading players and going to our players first about the thing. Perhaps bringing a player in sometimes is important to do that. But I think if you just read the clips in New England when Wes Welker was gone, Brady didn't seem to know about that. And he seemed to be bitter about that. So, and there's been some of those things every now and then out of New England where it seems Brady is out of the loop and it comes out. But why should he be in the loop? You're making a decision. You have to do what's best to the football team. I think the issue is are those young receivers in Green Bay better than Jordy Nelson, who's on the decline in his career, but still is a productive route runner. And him and Rodgers had great chemistry. That's the thing. They knew each other cold. So even though Nelson wouldn't necessarily get open, Rodgers could put the ball in the position with his accuracy that Nelson would still have a chance to make a play.
Charlie, I'm curious to the Giants we go next. A lot is expected of Saquon Barkley, the number two overall pick. And news coming out yesterday that he tweaked his left hamstring catching a ball running around in practice. The concern there this early on, we saw the excitement. He's a wonderful prospect, and he was a great player at Penn State. He saw that great 39-yard run last Thursday night against the Cleveland Browns. But the concern level here now, especially with leg injuries, which can hinder a guy and hang with a guy for a while when you look at the Giants' talented young rookie running back.
Well, I loved him in college. I thought he could do it all. I thought he could run inside with quickness and instincts. I thought he had speed to make big plays. You saw that in the preseason run. Thought he could catch the ball. Thought he could line up outside and catch the ball outside as a receiver, which gave you great versatility as far as using him. So I didn't see any holes in the guy. All the character on him was good. Work ethic is good. So there's a lot of players that get injured in training camp. You just have to monitor him and bring him back at the appropriate time, which that's not hard to always figure.
All right, how about Luck in Indianapolis, his return, what it means for the Colts and National Football League, and what you saw in his first preseason action?
Thought he was outstanding. throw like he never left.
Really?
Ball came out quick, accurate, field vision. You begin to remember that he took those Colts teams farther than their talent when he took them to the playoffs each time he did that. He has the ability to do that. Do you like the fact that the Colts emphasize getting better in the offensive line? Quentin Nelson in the first round is an example of that. So they're trying to protect him. I think the ball will come out quick. I think he'll read it from the line, a lot like Philip Rivers does with the Chargers, which is where Frank Reich was. Frank Reich was around Wentz, a very smart guy, like Luck, coming out, and he got him to be successful. Yes, they have to. The talent has to improve around him, but I think the thing about Luck is he held the ball too long trying to make a play. I think they'll get him. They've got to get him out of that, and I think they'll have the system to do that. But he looked very sharp.
All right, how about Cousins in Minnesota? What you've seen early on here as they bring in the big quarterback free agent?
Well, I haven't looked at the game yet from the weekend. But I know they're very happy with him, happy with his attitude. I think he is an upgrade over Case Keenum. The guy has a really good arm. He's got a sense for things. He's got a lot of talent around him. He's a smart guy. I think he's a good quarterback. I mean, his part is real simple. The season starts in January. Everything up to that is preseason. In other words, they're expected to be in the playoffs. They're expected to win the division. And then expect to go win those big games, and that's the thing he'll have to prove when that time comes.
Hey, Charlie, what about with the Rams? You know, with their great defensive player who's not signed up yet, Aaron Donald. Would you be concerned, or are you concerned if you were with that Rams organization right now? I mean, wouldn't you try to do everything you can to get this guy locked in?
Well, the thing is, and I've never seen numbers on this thing that were verified as to what the Rams were offering and what this guy wanted for a contract. Who knows, he may be some astronomical figure that's fully guaranteed for the length of the contract.
Right.
So he may be asking for something, and he may not be. I really don't know why it's not done. I think both sides want to get it done. I think the Rams will pay a huge number. I just don't know why it isn't done. Am I concerned? I'm concerned if the guy starts missing games.
Right. I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, and Charlie, we'll close out my final question for you with this. One of the more intriguing teams, from my vantage point, going into the season, with Watson coming off the torn ACL at the quarterback spot, with J.J. Watt coming back from injury, what that defense could potentially do, I'm really fascinated with just how good the Houston Texans can be this year.
Well, put them in December as a playoff contender, right? No question about that. Watson was fantastic last year in the short time he played, and it wasn't a fluke either. Guy showed field vision. He's athletic. He can throw. He's excellent on the deep ball. He's fantastic. He'll miss some short ones, but he'll hit the deep ones. The key there, their offensive tackles are very average at best, and you don't want this guy getting hit again. So that's my biggest concern. But defensively, they're strong at every level, and if they get Clowney back with Whitney Mercilus and J.J. Watt rushing the passer, that's a dominant defensive front, and that can control the whole game right there. They're well coached. I think they're right in playoff contention immediately again.
Charlie Casserly, NFL Network, former Texans and Skins general manager. Hey, Charlie, we appreciate the time this morning. We really do. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
Thanks, Charlie.
Okay, you too now.
You
Bye.
Got it. Does a great job on the NFL Network.
Yes.
And succinct to the point, gets right to it, and gives you everything you need to know, Taz.
Corporate Jones.
That's exactly
how that works. Front office city, we call that.
Yeah. Coming up straight ahead, we'll react to what Charlie had to say. And Carmelo Anthony makes it official as he goes to H-Town. We'll get into that next. Taz and the Moose with you, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Yes. 855-212-4227 is your number to call. It is Taz and the Moose here on this Tuesday morning. And Taz, yesterday, sad news, after we got off the airwaves, came down at, was I believe, 63 years of age.
Yes.
Jim the Anvil Neidhart passed away.
Yeah, it's very sad. Legendary competitor and legendary wrestler for many years in the wrestling industry and for the WWF, namely. you know, part of the great team was the Hart Foundation with him and the great Bret Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart were an amazing tag team, the WWF tag team champions. Yeah, very sad. And Jim's daughter, very successful amongst the WWE right now, Natalya, and she was very close with her dad. So obviously thoughts and prayers with the Neidhart family. You know, Jim was a great athlete. You know, he was not just a successful wrestler, but, you know, he was a great shot putter. A lot of people don't realize that. He actually held the California high school record in shot put from 1973 to 1985. And then he also played in the NFL. He played for the Oakland Raiders and also played for the Dallas Cowboys. You know, so, and then he got into the pro wrestling business. So, you know, a great athlete, very respected in the industry, and very well liked. I've had the opportunity to meet him maybe once or twice. I didn't know him that well, but his legacy and his legend, you know, a lot of people are mourning right now. And so thoughts and prayers with his family, friends,
yeah,
and
no
obviously
question
his
about
fan base.
63 years of age.
You remember him? You remember
yes,
him
no Bret question. Hart, right? No question. Great. Absolutely. He had a great personality as
he
well.
Did. Yeah, he was funny, man.
A dynamic personality. Came through the television set anytime you saw him, and kind of that funny kind of laugh as
he had
well.
That crazy laugh with the goatee.
Yes, with the goatee. Always play with the goatee. Yeah. I mean, when I didn't know about it until my wife, I was walking around the house yesterday after the show, and my wife Donna, who watches Divas, his daughter is a
Natalya.
Big,
she's
Natalya,
on there,
part of that series.
And Jim's been on there, I think,
right?
Also. Yeah,
the house, and
right. I don't watch it.
And so
heard.
She said, "I didn't know Jim the Anvil. I didn't know Jim Neidhart died. Yeah. I go, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I go, what did Taz say? I go, I haven't talked to him yet today, so I don't know exactly. But that's sad. 63 years of age.
Yeah, he apparently what happened. The reports are that he fell. Yesterday morning, I believe it was, he fell down. He hit his head.
Had he been in bad health?
I don't believe so. I'll delve into it more, but I don't believe so. I don't know for a fact, so don't quote me on that. But I apparently he had a fall, and I guess he hit his head hard, and you know it's just sad. You know,
he's 63 years of age,
just
way
a young guy, and was always still full of life. I mean, you know, and he. Like I said, he was in the industry, in the sport of pro wrestling. He was just loved by everybody. And a lot of people in our game here, you know, not everybody's loved, you know. So, you know, that some guys have, you know, some guys are not loved. This guy was loved. Jim Neidhart was loved. The Anvil was loved by a lot of people. I'm talking about from the wrestling business itself, internal, in the locker rooms. And,
yeah.
Was a powerhouse in the ring.
And he is going to be dearly missed.
Oh, yeah.
No question about it.
He was a powerhouse in the ring, too. He could do things in the ring physically. And that's what made him and Bret Hart such a great team. It was like, I can't remember, it was the late, great Gorilla Monsoon who deemed him the Porsche and the tank. That's what it was like, because Bret was like the Porsche and Neidhart was like the tank, you know. And they just worked great together. And they kind of, they're legends, that Hart Foundation team. But, you know, Jim by himself, Bret by himself, they both had success.
They did.
So thoughts and prayers with his family.
No question about it. We talked to Charlie Casserly the last segment, NFL Network, former Redskins and Texans general manager. A couple of things coming off the conversation there. Number one, he talked about the idea of when to play quarterbacks, right? We talk about the rookie quarterback, whether it be Baker Mayfield, Rosen, Allen, Sam Darnold with the New York Jets, and the impact of when you get one of those guys that's supposed to be, quote-unquote, the savior for your franchise, the guy that is going to be the franchise, the stabilizing force that's going to be and help bring relevant football to your team for years to come. When do you play that guy? And I think he had the correct answer when he asked the question, when do you play him? Because I think you got to look at it individually, each and every guy, because I think it comes to them at different times based on their experience collegiately, when the game slows down for them in the National Football League, the support staff they have around them as terms of talent on the NFL level, and certainly the coaching and the development that they're getting in the National Football League as well, and certainly their learning curve as an individual too.
He laid it out perfectly, Moose, to your point. He did lay it out perfectly, especially with somebody, what was it, Bortles, saying at that time, Blake was the best quarterback they had, and that's why they had to go with him. It wasn't like they wanted to play a young guy. You know, I'm just saying, like, he explained it perfectly how the timing is impeccable, and if you have another resource there with a guy with some time, like let's just say, and you and I discussed it with Charlie a segment ago, with Baker Mayfield and Tyrod Taylor. It's a perfect example of a veteran guy there who probably is not going to take you to the big dance, Tyrod Taylor, but he could buy you enough time, get you a couple of wins here and there, while Baker Mayfield Maybe he's your franchise guy. Baker's learning that offense to learn how to be an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, and then we get to Cleveland, and not necessarily just focusing on Mayfield, but the idea of Dez Bryant and the Cleveland Browns and why it would or would not work. And it's fascinating. Listen, the perception I have of Dez Bryant is I think Dez Bryant can help a team. Right. I still do that. I still believe that. And Charlie, I asked him, was he surprised that Dez was not on a team as of yet? And he said no, because if you look at the game film the last 2 years,
right,
if you guard him man-to-man press coverage, he has trouble getting separation at the line of scrimmage. He has trouble being able to break free from physical cornerbacks. So, therefore, I'm not all that surprised that he doesn't have a job as of yet. Now, he turned down a deal with the Baltimore Ravens and said thanks, but no thanks. But even after that, Taz, I thought Dez would have a job. He does not. Mm. To me, it's still surprising. I still think there's a place in the NFL for him. Do I think that Dez is as dominant as he was 5 years ago physically? No, but I still think there's a place for him in the NFL.
And I got to wonder, man. I'm just in my – I mean, I'll ask you. I mean, I know you're not going to know for sure, but you think he meaning Dez Bryant, regrets – that he didn't take that opportunity with the Ravens?
He might.
Man, I think
But
I
he might look at a scenario here, Taz, where he puts himself in a situation to win right away. But if that's not the Cleveland Browns.
He's got to go in and learn somebody's offense.
No, I agree with you.
He's late to the dance,
I don't disagree
right?
with you. Know what I mean? But there are certain instances where you can make use of Dez Bryant's talents, too.
Right.
If you throw a red zone high ball offense, you throw it up there, let Dez go up there and get it. Yeah. Dez Bryant doesn't need to learn all that much of the offense in order to be able to do that. Now,
guy,
in terms of the audibles at the line of scrimmage, knowing the offense like the back of the hand, will that be an adjustment for a receiver? Yeah, I think that would be an adjustment.
I mean, yeah, it was definitely, I don't want to say gutsy, but it was a little perplexing that he just kind of was like, didn't even really want to entertain the whole Baltimore Ravens thing. I mean, and now at this point, you got to wonder, too, did he turn off a lot of teams for that? Do other teams look at it like, well, do we want to entertain him and get him engaged with a conversation with Dez when he could publicly turn us down and then we get punked out and it looks bad? You never know. I'm just saying. It could be.
If you're interested, though, wouldn't you be
interested
regardless?
Yeah. I would think,
and you wouldn't want to get embarrassed or, say, punked out by Dez Bryant. And if you did, say he did do that, then you turn the page, you move on, you learn something about Dez Bryant, too. Either you want to work or you don't.
Right.
So he might have turned down the Raven deal, Taz, and said to himself, I think there's a better deal out there for me. I don't want to go to Baltimore. They've got an unsteady quarterback position. Flacco's not a great regular season quarterback. Right. Lamar Jackson's there. This is not a situation that I find myself to where I'm going to be better off in Baltimore and put up some gaudy stats. I want to go play with a quarterback that's a big-time quarterback. Unfortunately, that job has not come calling as of yet. It might end up being the Cleveland Browns. I think it would work in Cleveland.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, and you've been a proponent of that as
well.
If you have him, Gordon, and Landry, certainly the attention's not going to be on Dez Bryant down in, down out.
No, and you know, when the Browns first reached out last week, I think it was, to Dez. Apparently, Dez didn't get back to him right away. Next thing you know, while then, the Browns are playing in their preseason game, and he's tweeting like crazy during the game. It was weird, and he's like, I'm all in. I'm going to go to Cleveland and meet them, but I guess he didn't initially talk to them at first, and it was kind of like, I don't know if he was looking for the Browns to chase him a little bit. Maybe that's what it was. It was kind of odd, I guess, but it doesn't matter. He's apparently meeting with them this week.
Yeah, and we'll see if Dez Bryant ends up as a member of the Cleveland Browns. We've got an action-packed final hour coming your way next. We've got the three, the leftovers, and some other things to get into, too, as we roll right along on a busy Tuesday morning. It's Taz and the Moose with you, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.